true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, recite you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
I'm pretty good, you know. I just woke up because I'm in California, so time is different. And you've already been out and about and driving, and you drove to Vermont and back. The reason I know this for the listeners is that Katie left me a voice memo really early in the morning before I got up. It did not wake me up, but it was very early my time. And there was a voice back. Well, it was the background noise of turn left here in 19 feet.
I'm sure that was annoying. Good. It's like, good morning. My GPS is going to talk to you now.
Yeah, that was fun times. Fun times. It's all good. That's how we know where Katie is when Katie leaves voice memos and the GPS shouts at us in the background. Yeah.
It's in my human design chart. I have to move around. It's there.
Is it really?
Oh my God, everything is there.
Does it say anything about GPS? No, it was channeled before GPS.
I was actually asking, does it say anything about GPS? Wait, that wouldn't happen. Except that it could.
Maybe it says something about guides. Yeah, like you need assistance while moving
and
or something.
Technology, and it might say things about technology and my relationship to technology and like,
yeah,
and machines and all kinds of shit.
Well, this morning, we are jumping right on to our guest. Yes, are we?
Yeah.
We got confirmation?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes. It's been a lot of things to navigate in 24 hours. Yes, he is coming. And he had confirmed, and the email, he showed me the email, and I was like, yeah, that never came to me. But he and I have had that before, too, where, because he's in a class of mine, which I'm very excited to talk about on the show, because... Like, I mean, I'll say this when he comes on, but just we're here, so why not? His name is Steve Sfar. Sfar. It's like, how far can you throw this football? thank you.
That was good, because I just want to stop and acknowledge the joke. The first half of the joke was a struggle. Like, how Sfar was like, okay, that kind of works. But then you nailed it with this football. Like, come on.
I'm a comedian.
Yeah. Like, you say, is it get it? Yep, there it is.
Land it.
And now I've ruined it.
Those are the best ones. Don't you find that it's the best when you think it's maybe not going to land, and then it feels triple satisfying when it does? Because you're like, well, it's going to fall, and it landed.
Yeah. It's like some jugglers, when they're building up to do a big trick, they'll drop on purpose, because otherwise it just looks too easy.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
God, that makes me think of our magician friend.
We've discussed this, Katie. We're going to have to edit that out.
No? Why?
Well, we did last time.
We did? Why?
Yeah.
It was complimentary.
I think it was post the conversation. I don't know. Our editor did, so.
It was very complimentary of our magician friend. And I was hanging out with Rami, very close friend of the podcast, as you all know, yesterday. They came up here.
Yeah.
And stayed at my pad.
How nice.
Fucking great. Anyway, I didn't realize how close Rami and our magician friend are.
Yeah, they're like besties.
Yeah, and so I got to see the texts of all the love and the love, so much love. We have a mutual friend who's a magician, who's deeply in love with people, a person right now. And I didn't know that Rami was such good friends with magician friend. End of story.
Yeah.
That's really boring. You're welcome, listener. So our friend Steve Sfar, who's coming on the show right now, isn't a writing student of mine, and he's someone who I know because, and this is such an interesting way to meet a person, he went to every play I was ever in at Capitol Stage, including every solo show I did and every stand-up comedy show I ever did there. And he was at the time just an avid theater goer. And a lot of times, like, I don't know about you, but I meet people, if somebody comes to see a show that you're in and then they want to chit-chat a lot, they're not always the people you want to stay in touch with, because sometimes audience people, how do I say that? Maybe you can say it better than me. Like, people who come up after a show that are like, let's be friends. You're like, oh, but no, because what you're basing your desire to be friends with me on is this thing you just saw me do that you enjoyed?
It's what we talked about last week, that projection. Like sometimes, yes, there's a genuine connection. And sometimes there's this, I project upon to you what I need from you, what I see you as out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, theater is all projection. The audience is supposed to project onto the actor. That's literally psychologically what happens. Uh-huh. But like, I'm not having that experience of you. You're sitting there. I have to say these words and hit these marks.
Yeah.
Now I want to go home. I'm an introvert. But you want to be good friends because you saw me do a cool thing.
Yeah.
Or that you have decided is cool. So it's complicated, at least for me as like a real like show's over, I want to go home kind of lady. It's complicated to be like, okay, be patient, be expansive, try to hear this person.
Yeah.
And then people in audiences don't remember that like the feeling they have is based on a thing you just did where you weren't being you. Uh-huh. You were being some other person. Now, of course, your essence, I think, transmits and communicates and people get a sense that they want to be buddies with you. But I'm now having my first interaction with you. So I'm assessing, do I want to talk to you now? I'm assessing it now, but you've already assessed it for 2 hours. So it's a very weird way to meet a person. But then someone like Steve, I met him so many times after so many shows that I had some judgments initially that were incorrect. And then I had some like reasons to stay at arm's length for a while. I'm putting my fucking camera back on. Fuck you, technology. And if it doesn't work, I'll turn it off.
It's gonna work.
We'll see what happens. Anyway, so many times that having met him so many times, I got to over time, like get to know him as a person because he was there all the time. And I could tell on his face, understood the weirdness of the dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And he would be like, yeah, you were great. I'll go. And I'd be like, thanks, I'm just tired and I need to go home. And he'd be like, I get it. And then like that happens 20 times. And eventually it's like, Steve, you're here again. Hi, how are your kids? Like you become,
right.
It's like a real thing, not just a, I've been projecting on you for 2 hours, now be my friend.
Right.
Like he just really got that. And then we were able to become friends. Now he's in my writing class.
I'm going to use the word persistence versus insistence.
That's good. Or just like showing up openly, repeatedly, instead of insistence.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's here. Let's talk to him.
Let's let him in. Here he comes. This is always the adventure when we first let people in. They like show up in a weird way. There he is. He can't hear us yet.
You don't have to narrate this.
Yeah, I do. I really want to. Why wouldn't I? But it's fun.
You really?
It's a joy.
Because you're filling empty time for no reason. Why?
I disagree.
What's
hey,
the
Steve
reason?
Svar.
Let's argue about this.
Hello.
Steve Svar!
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Fantastic.
Real quick, Cassidy and I are in the middle of an argument that I would like to complete, and then we're going to talk about you a lot.
This is how it works. Welcome to our dynamic.
When you're coming in, right, whenever the guest is coming, we've been chit-chatting a little bit, right? And then the guest comes in, and Cassidy has a compulsion. Is that fair?
I don't know. Finish the thought.
Okay, you tell me if it's a compulsion. Cassidy has a need to, when this guest is coming in, fill the airtime with words narrating to the listener. Now he's coming in. He can't hear us yet. The audio hasn't turned on. He's there, but we're not sure. But he's narrating. And I'm irritated by it only because I'm hearing the subtext of what he's doing, or I'm projecting that I know what the subtext is, which is, I'm so uncomfortable with 4 seconds of silence that I need to manage the experience of the audience and make them comfortable because I've decided they can't handle silence. That's my projection. Now you tell me.
That is a total projection. It's a total projection, Katie, because I know we have an editor.
So then what is it?
I'll tell you.
Okay.
It's fun. Literally, that's it. For me, I'm just making conversation just like we do. We're silly. We say shit. We get goofy. I was just being silly. I'm sorry that my version of silly didn't match up with your version of desire, but...
You don't have to do that.
But...
Why would you... You don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. It's... I told you it was a projection.
Yeah, I agree. It's a total projection.
So you're telling me, though, I need to clarify one piece. There's no part of you that's, like, filling time out of nervousness of what other people will think?
Not in this case, no, because I know we have an editor. We could just sit there in dead silence and he'll take it out.
That's what I always think.
Yeah, and he'll probably take this out.
I hope he doesn't. We need to hear people.
It's good
stuff. He should not take this. This is what we do. If I'm willing publicly, and this is actually a really good transition into Steve. If this is the whole fucking point, if I'm willing to publicly own, God, this is exactly a transition into Steve because of what Steve is writing a book about. I'm very excited. If I'm willing to say, here's my projection. I didn't say you're a fucking asshole because I said I am irritated because I have a projection. That's like adult behavior. Okay. And I'm saying, tell me what is true. I've told you my weird version of reality that could be true because I know you and you've owned publicly that you have that tendency that I just named.
Right.
So I'm not insane for having that idea. But this is how communication can work better between people if we can each see where we're coming from. And this is what we talk about every week.
Yeah.
So if you and I don't do it, then we're being false. If we don't do it publicly, we're going to edit that out. That's like the whole podcast.
No, we won't.
Okay,
from my end, I did feel attacked. I felt criticized. And then I felt like you tacked on. I'm just projecting that towards the end of that attack. So that's why I was being defensive. So that was me in reaction my original feeling of being attacked.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So that was where the, oh, I'm sorry thing, the passive aggressive, I'm sorry
that
bullshit
makes a
that I
thousand
said
percent
was,
in, sense.
Was coming from.
A zillion percent. And that is, to be clear, not what I was doing. I don't feel right. like I tacked that's, it on.
No. You didn't. You observed it as it was coming out, worked it in.
I observed it before I said it, even.
Oh, okay.
I was like, oh, I'm going to project now. Now I'm going to narrate that I'm projecting. I hope he'll clarify for me where I'm incorrect or correct. And even if I were correct, I get to calm down about it. It's not your problem.
Yeah, me too.
There's another layer to it.
Yeah, let's hear it, Steve.
Go ahead, Steve. Bring
Welcome.
It.
Hello, hello.
Come on in.
So there's just another layer that you're also putting on a presentation. And it's absolutely true that we're uncomfortable. I should say extroverts are uncomfortable with silence. Introverts are quite fine with saying, oh, they take 8 or 10 seconds to think what they're going to think. Extroverts think something's wrong. There's not noise out there. So that's definitely true in just human dynamics. But you guys are also putting on a show, and dead time on the show can feel like you're not holding the audience too. So,
but at the same time, he knows we have an editor. Like he said, we have an editor who listens to every episode and can do whatever we need him to do or he needs to do or whatever.
Gotcha.
But your point isn't without merit.
Yeah, it's just another thing there that we're all paying attention to.
That makes sense.
Well, the other layer is talking about it is part of the presentation and being aware that our discussion of it is also part of the presentation.
It's content.
That's how I see it. I'm like, this is deep, meaningful content that like, this is the whole point. I'm not going to hide anything. If we hide, we may as well. I don't even know what we'd be doing if we're hiding. So Steve.
Hello.
And speaking of not hiding, I was talking about you briefly before you came on and saying that, one, I get the pleasure right now of having you in a writing class of mine. So I'm getting to hear this like fabulous, interesting, God, juicy piece of writing that you're creating come to life. And I can't wait to talk about it with you here. But two, I was talking about the interesting dynamic of basically how you and I met was you came to see shows at Capitol Stage. And my experience was I saw you so many times after so many shows that it had a different quality than the typical person talking to actor after a show dynamic, which can be a little bit odd. Because what I was saying was that what happens is a person in an audience projects onto an actor for 2 hours. They go like, look, that person doing that. Now I'm writing a narrative about who they are. Now I want to talk to them because I've written a narrative in my head about who they are. But the person on stage is just going like, I have to say my lines and now I've done saying my lines and I want to go home is my thing. I like to go home after the big extroversion moments. And so when people want to chit chat, they feel close to you, but you don't know them yet at all. And you're like, I guess I have to be real nice now, but I'm an introvert and I don't want to talk to anyone ever. So then, but with you, it was so different because in my experience, because you always go to shows there and I feel like you saw everything I ever did.
We've been subscribers for a long time. And I first saw you doing Insides Out because we also used to be subscribers at Sacramento Theater Company.
Oh God, that was the first run of that show.
It was a long time ago and it was stunning. It was wonderful.
Aw, thanks. Well, anyway, I just really appreciated how you always seem to, after shows, kind of get the vibe of, this lady just did a big thing and she's probably a little tired, so I'm going to just, hi,
yeah.
Bye.
very, I mean, revealing. I mean, you literally commit like sort of emotional and spiritual Harry Carey on stage with Inside Out, right?
I would agree.
It's like you're cutting your guts open and spilling them on stage. So I think the audience does want to know and talk about the play. You know, what did you think of this part? But I do try to be respectful of the fact that, guys know this. And Cassidy, I've seen you in wonderful plays too. You guys are both such moving, phenomenal actors. But an actor on stage is presenting, but they're also interacting with the audience. And so there is a feeling of shared intimacy. And that's an interesting thing, Katie. I had not thought about that afterwards, that some people might overly, you know, play into their new found friend.
It's really a thing. And I really don't want to, I can't fault people for it. I do the same thing. Every play I've ever seen, I'm like, oh, I'm in love with that one. And I like her a lot. And that one scares me.
I've definitely like had the experience of watching someone that I'd never seen before and literally thinking I've fallen in love with them.
Exactly.
Like, I just saw you do a play. I have no idea what you're actually like human-wise, but there's something about sometimes something happens and you just go, well, I'm in love with that person. I'll marry them. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's what it's about, is connection.
Yeah.
Connection. Yes. So my question to that point, Steve, can you tell us a little bit about the kind of work you've been doing in your life professionally and like how that work led to this book you're writing?
So personally, as a person, which I've been for a long time, always been very interested in the spiritual and trying to figure out what is this reality that we're all walking through. And so that's just always been a stream in my life that has evolved. And professionally, I was an attorney for 12 years. In the mid 90s, I started doing more business consulting. You would call it organization development consulting. So you help managers and leaders lead better, and you do team development. A big part of that is emotional intelligence, kind of, and there's a whole great batch of work that helps people do that, because many people, you know, aren't very good with emotions. And emotional intelligence is a lot about, well, there's a technique-y side. When someone does this, do the following three steps of active listening, and then they'll feel heard.
Right.
And that's kind of outside. But the harder part is to pay attention to reactions going on inside of you. So from spiritual intelligence, from emotional intelligence, there's a higher level too of spiritual intelligence. Because really to deal with those things that are going on inside of you, it just, your interiors become, are what's attached to or your vehicle for spirituality. So I continued as my career evolved to, I was an executive coach mostly for the last 12 years of the work I did. So I'm working with managers that are under all this pressure to really deliver results.
Right.
And we can do the technique-y stuff on the outside, but it doesn't last under pressure. But the rudder to the ship for real change is the interior. So my work was always interior based. Now, in the last year, I've retired from active business work, and I've spent really kind of a year or two, I've had kind of a spiritually dry season where my older practices didn't quite, you know, they just, it was a plateau. And I've kind of really in the last 6 months, 8 months, really come down to my next chapter is as a writer. I always did a lot of business writing. I wrote a series of leadership articles in a blog series called 3-Minute Wisdom for many years. So it was always geared towards business, but now I feel much freer. And so I'm writing this book. It doesn't have a name yet. I think it's going to be a book, maybe be a collection of essays I published somewhere, but it's now freed from the need to be quite so tied to tangible results I can know at the end of the week to this deeper exploration. And I think I have these kind of six ways to look into the window of our interior. And that's the writing project that I'm working on, I'm sharing with you and our writers group, and I'm gaining a lot from that process.
How cool is that? I so identify with what you're saying about the freeing it off of from the constraints of a structured business context. Like Cassidy and I both happened to work and have worked many times as executive coachy types through different organizations with different corporate groups to teach either public speaking or interpersonal communication skills. And so we both have this similar experience. We come at it from an improv training background, but it's all the same stuff. It's all your interior, you know, life examined. And I happen to have a business coaching client right now who I'm working with, who's God, is she high level. And what I love, and I wonder if you find this, Steve, what I love in that context is seeing how you can be like an entry-level data scientist, or you can be the CEO of all CEOs. And boy, are people just dealing with all the same stuff. It's pretty simple. We're all dealing with the same interior. Now, we're all different interiors, but it's all, there's kind of a way that a lot of it is just very similar. Did you?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the higher up an executive gets, the fewer people can give them honest feedback.
Right.
The fewer people they can really be honest in front of. Yeah. And this universality of being human, it's really cool, the universality and the diversity. I mean, we are each individually unique. And that's the cool thing. We're bringing that unique perspective. If we have the courage to, you know, go inside and really continue to discover and express our individuality. But the universality is about feeling like I'm an imposter, about feeling like, you know, I'm still pleasing daddy, or, you know, one of a million varieties of different things that we're striving to do that we learned early on. They served us well back then. We've outgrown them, but we don't know that yet. That's part of the self-discovery and self-expression process. So that is part of the universality that I think you're talking about.
Yeah, there's so much that's universal. And then there's so much that's unique. Like we talk on this podcast a lot about, I'm pretty obsessed with human design as a structure for learning about the individual self. And because it's so specific and detailed to the individual. But the more I look at that system, the more I'm convinced day by day that we can almost generalize almost never, because people are so unique, and yet you can, kind of. So there's a weird paradox there. Like certain things are universally human, and certain things are really specific how they work with the individual. But that does bring me to, so this book, I wanted to just say, and then I want to hear your perspective on this. Here's how I'd frame it for the listeners and for Cassidy's context is that I believe the way you framed it was that you were like, I think I figured out how the universe works and how humans work.
Finally.
Right? Somebody did it. And how humans function within it, or how they can optimally function within it. Here's six things that make that be approachable.
Well, although it is true, I have figured out the entire universe. If we say that out loud, the Illuminati will have me killed.
Oh,
right.
So, well, actually, the way I would frame it is a little differently. I love how I continue to use my life and my experience to learn more about what seems to work. And, you know, from being an attorney, we're at a super young age. These business people trust you. He seems to know what he's doing, you know. And so I had windows into how lots of people and lots of powerful people worked early on and for a long time. And so all of those things gave me insights into kind of what seems to work. And I think these six principles, they're not the only six. There's probably 6 million, but these are six ways I've been able to use in my life. And they do seem to correlate or run in the direction of the grain, the fabric of the universe. I'm willing to say that. But I am really stumbling around to figure these out. As a matter of fact, when I started this book, I thought, oh, and by the way, these six things are things I've tried to, I didn't make these up. These are all collected wisdom from tons of reading and experiencing and teachers and so on. But I tried to find out, or they started to feel like, if you live your life this way, if you assume for a minute, I don't know if it's quote unquote true, but just try it and see what fruits come to you from doing it. You know, things seem to work out better, both internally. I self-discover and self-express more. And oh my gosh, when the rudder of the ship starts pointing in the right direction, things, you know, out in the storm and the sea seem to go better too. So that's what I would say about the six. They seem to point, to me, they seem to be part of the fabric of the universe. I'm willing to go with that for now.
I love that. And is the number six just what arose? Or did you go one day like, I'd like there to be six. Let's find out. I'm assuming they just...
No, it's not some sacred geometry, you know, preordained thing. I mean, maybe it is and I don't know. But as I just kept saying, you know, like the first one is see deeply. You know, can you continue to use life's experience to look at your conditioning? Or your irritation, or the things that cause things to come up. That's all food for growth. We could run away from it because we're trained to run away from something uncomfortable. Quick, go get comfort. I know, ice cream. So you know, that's the standard tendency, but can I stick in the discomfort and learn something?
Exactly.
So that's, yeah, that's just an example of, isn't that, doesn't that seem to be woven into the universe? Isn't our continual experience of life going to be more and more chances for that? So that's kind of how it came up. Oh, so didn't answer your question. So it's not the six. It's like, I just kept, you know, saying, well, I really ought to do this. And yeah, probably this. And my wife would probably tell you, Steve, you really ought to have 106 here because there's a lot you've left off the table. But for me, these six are ways to that feel useful to me.
You know what I appreciate too? I was realizing this the other day. So I've been coached a lot of times by people I've been coached by that say, you got to remember, Katie, the things that are fully intuitive and natural to you, people do not know them. Like the reason you're teaching is because you can articulate things that are organic to you that are not organic to other people. But I have to often be reminded, well, I'll put it this way. I'm lucky and challenged to regularly be teaching, which is an opportunity to always be shown and reshown and shown and reshown what people already know and what they don't already know. And coming back to my saying my projection to Cassidy earlier, it's like, I don't know. I constantly experience myself projecting all kinds of shit onto people. And my favorite thing in life is when there's safety to, because I learned all the tools of how to name it and own it and look at the vulnerability under it and not marry myself to it. But that doesn't mean it isn't happening in my psyche. So when people are willing to go there, I just feel deeply close. See, I feel closer to Cassidy now, and I'm wanting to ask him, I'm hoping he doesn't feel farther away. But my point being, like, about your book, when you talk about the principle of, the first one was see deeply, it is so innate in me to see deeply that I'll start a class. Let's say I have a class right that I just finished that was called Breaking Through and Moving Forward Using Spiritual Tools. Okay. I get in there and I think I have these unconscious assumptions about where everybody is at baseline. And every time I teach a class, I get reminded, Katie, what made you think these people were coming to this room all on the same baseline of anything? Nobody's on the same baseline as anything. Unless you've gone through the same exact curriculum together for 10 years, da-da-da, then you build a baseline. But people are coming at each moment from, like, see deeply. We could just look at see deeply. How deeply are people already seeing? I'm assuming if you come to a class called Breaking Through and Moving Forward, you've already done some work and you're already seeing deeply. Not necessarily.
Right. Here's the just constant, you know, in the universe and the way humanity is trying to work itself from spirit down into material form. This thing about diversity, of course, we've each got to bring our own unique perspective. That's the beauty. That's the symphony. We got 8 billion people in the symphony. Of course, we're each going to have our own history. People have history with you or with other people in the class, or by the second day of the class, they've got history with each other. They're forming opinions. We can't not do that as humans. So yes, of course you have some preconceived notion going in. And yes, it's always going to be partially true and partially wrong. You know, the best we can be doing, I think the point of this first chapter is about...
Be aware?
Yes.
Because I know.
Because yeah. You've got something on the blackboard that you're going to do, but then you'll be feeling something or getting something from the folks, and that will... erase half the blackboard.
Exactly. Or I'll have a curriculum. Like, I've learned at least this much. I'm going to try to hit these two points today. And I know that after I hit the first one, there's going to be 8 questions that make me realize all kinds of assumptions I had about the second point. So cool. We can't even go there yet because we have to get everybody up to speed on the first one. And that's what makes it fun, I think. That's where the improv of it comes in, where you're like, oh, okay, in real time.
Not just improv. That's where the impact is, I think. Whatever stale thing, because I did a lot of curriculum development. It was on, you know, communication or strategic planning or something. And I would meet with a group of executives. And I would, and you kind of have to have that. I mean, the best spiritual teaching might be to show up and say, let's see what's in the room. Not many CEOs are sticking around for that. So, but I would plan like 3 activities, even if we didn't have time for all of them, but they were sort of like each a draft. I might try one or try another. And then whatever caught fire, I would discard the rest. And that's where, you know, we had found the gold. We would just go with whatever caught fire with the group.
100,000,000%. That's really...
I love the idea of how we have our preconceived notions of what is baseline and what we, and if we aren't, I'm constantly reminded, or I like to remember, there's one story, I'll tell it very quickly because it's super relevant. It's about a student.
We got time.
There was a student, this is when I was teaching a lot of theater to youth, and I would have a summer camp and stuff like that. And we had this one young woman who, when we were rehearsing the show, we had auditioned everybody, and she had a decent sized role because she was a really good singer. And when she'd auditioned with her song, she had a lot of presence, was awesome. But when we would rehearse the show, she would never, ever know when to, like, she would never speak when it was her turn. And I say it that way because that's how it was actually activated. In my mind, it was, don't you know your cues, right? So here we were going, you got to learn your cues. You got to learn your cues. You got to know when to come in. You've got to rehearse your lines. You've got to memorize your cues and your lines. Or you've got to memorize your lines. We kept saying, you got to memorize your lines. And finally, like close to like final dress, and she was never getting it, Rami took her aside. Rami was working in this camp with me. Or she went to Rami maybe and was like, you keep saying these words. I don't know what they mean.
Aww.
Learn my cues. How do I do that?
Oh.
So it was like, oh, we have to wind this back
another layer
to step one. And it's a very simple explanation, but we had just assumed something.
Sure.
And like, oh, get a friend or a family, have them hold the script. Or when you look at the script, cover up part of the lines above it. You need to know what the words before your words are so you know when to speak. Like, that sounds so stupid and like, I'm going to be really explanatory. But if no one had ever explained that to you and you'd never been exposed to it, like you understand it musically, you know what a musical cue is, but you don't know what a verbal cue is. And it was just such a revelation. And she was next day amazing.
That's it, exactly.
From that moment on.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. It was just like, oh, right. We have to be present to every single person's specific experience. And that's a challenge as a teacher because you're teaching a general group.
Totally. There's one that I run into a lot that God, it's taken me a while to really get how hard this is for a lot of people, or how hard isn't even the right word, how complex and subtle this is. I'll say to a group of people, because what I'm doing is energy healing, right? So with energy healing, ideally what's happening is you, the client, are aware of what is happening in your body. And then you feel in your body where the stuck energy is. So that if I say to you, feel that, where is it? You know what feel that means, and you know where it is because it's happening to you. I'm assuming if it's happening to you, you know what it feels like and where it is.
Nope.
So I've spent a lot more time than I thought I would as a healer teaching people how to get somatically aware. And I mean, a lot of people are, let's be real. A lot of my clients that show up are somatically aware, but like some aren't. And I have to go like, so if you could give that feeling a shape, is it like a cloud? Is it like a circle? Is it like a sphere? Is it like a river? They go, oh yeah, it's kind of like a fire. And I go, cool. And they go, but that's crazy. And I go, well,
oh no.
And I go, what if it's not crazy? I think you're right on it. It's a fire. Okay. So if it's a fire, where is it? Is it in your chest, your throat, your upper back, your lower back? They go, well, it's in my knees, but that's weird, right? And I go, no, cool. It's in your knees. There's a fire in your knees. Now feel, can you feel that for me? And they go, okay, I feel it. It hurts. And I go, stay there. And then I do my wizard thing and I bring light in there. And then they go, wow, it doesn't hurt anymore. And I go, hallelujah. All I needed them to do was be present to where the thing was, name it, and stay with it. But that alone, I assumed, was like, sure, sure, sure. We just feel into it and stay there. No.
The building blocks of basic perception and awareness and realizing that we don't always have a common experience of that. I mean, that goes to like people's not trusting that racism is a thing because I don't have that experience, so it's not real.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But we have to remember that we have to keep winding back to the earliest iteration of something that we can find to say like, okay, do you feel? Do you know what the word feel, F-E-E-L, means?
Yeah, man. I talked once, I was teaching an improv class at Stanford, and we spent 6 weeks talking about what is it to exist? What is being? Like, I introduced wrongly or rightly on day one. I was like, so this brings us to being. Now, and I'm moving on. And 18 people were like, wait. What's being?
Do you mean the biota of my...
Yeah.
Was this the Stanford philosophy department?
A few of them were asking me that. But it was so... This particular group, to your point, Steve, about what catches fire, this group was like, hold up. I have no idea what being is. Help me out. And they wanted to know every week. And I happened to have a lot to say about it. So I'd talk for an hour about being and answer all their questions. And then we'd do some improv.
And I bet their improv took off like heck once they entered. That was their entry.
And you know what else? That group is the only group to this day. And I attribute this to them. They were just that was just a magic group. They follow up with me. They want to know when I'm coming back. They loved it. They worked together outside of class and formed a team and did all kinds.
They
fell in love with the stuff. But I've tried many different angles on many different groups, and that was a particularly special group. I'm not sure what happened there, really.
Magic.
Yeah, magic. And so with your book, Steve, what are you hoping... I am aware of the time, and we have to get you out right on time, right? Right around 9?
Yeah, I've got some stuff to do.
Okay, so we probably want to try to go into your records in a minute here if you're wanting to do that.
Sure.
But just briefly, like, to kind of wrap up the book conversation, what is it that you're hoping people will take from it? What is your sort of aim with it? I mean, I can assume, but I'd love to hear your words about it.
You know, where I'm landing at the moment is transforming consciousness. And I could even say transforming our consciousness, because writing the book, I mean, I thought I knew something about, you know, each of these areas, but by writing it, you know, there's a discipline. Writing reveals. And so by actually putting the words down, I started to realize, well, what the heck do I mean by, you know, being or feeling or somatic? So it's deepening my consciousness. And if I'm thinking, if I do this authentically, that unique voice of mine and my experience of this will come through to the reader, and it will give them a chance, for those who want to transform their consciousness. If you're willing to commit your life to, or not even commit, like some, like go be a monk, if you're willing to see the world as a constant way to bring your full being, there's a few narcissists, but 99% of people, they bring their full being. There's a sense of service in it. And so I think there's enough darkness in the world. I think I can add to the light, and people want that. And I think I can help them find ways to do that better.
And that makes me wonder, did you always have a sense of your whole life of like, yeah, I know stuff. I trust myself. People should listen to me. did you always have that?
No. Arrogance is one of my things. I was very smart and very verbal as a kid and did not have a sense of self-worth. Very little stuff in my life. I mean, I was had, you know, fine family and stuff, loving in their way and stuff, but not attuned to the things that can hurt a little child. And so I think I felt all the time I'd better present as an expert, a BSer basically, because that was how I kind of, you know, got through life.
Yep.
So no, it's not a matter of knowing. It's a matter of making other people think I know.
Exactly. Boy, do I relate to that.
It's the first level of being a trainer, which I did a lot of. It is not effective as an executive coach if you're not showing up really authentic. You know, the first 3 months of working with some high-paced executive, all of it almost was about, and we had exercises and they took assessments and all this stuff, set goals, met with the boss, fine. But it was about trust building, because only once they have trust with you can we really go to the interior place. And sometimes out of a 6-month engagement, there'd be like 2 days where really they let down and we got in and could do some work. And it might be helpful. And that was what the whole thing was worth. But all the rest of the time was necessary to get to those 2 days.
Do you attribute that to the fact that these particular folks didn't know when you walked in the room that they'd have to be doing interior work? They thought, like, we're going to make some lists and show up for some stuff.
Have some to-dos and teach me time management.
Yeah.
I bet that's true for a lot of them. I tried to be upfront about my style.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely my style. That's not every coach's style. But see, there's the uniqueness. That was my way of being true to how I could teach.
Was there a moment that you could, I'm sure this is, the answer is no, but I'll, for the, because language is so dumb and so limited, but was there a series of moments or a period of time where you kind of watched yourself shifting from acting like you knew what you were doing to knowing something?
Absolutely.
Do you remember when that was or how it happened?
I would say it was a slow trickle, you know, the ice melting, as opposed to a revelation on a day.
Yeah.
And it continues to happen. It's continued to happen in writing this book.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds about right. Isn't that the, it's so funny because it points me to, and then we'll go in your records, but it points me to the weird irony of youth and age, of how when you're young, all you have is your ability to put on a mask and to go like, I can do stuff. See? And it's not all you have, because you might have intuition or talent or intelligence or adaptability. But then the older you get, the more actual wisdom you have. And then the fewer opportunities you have to apply it, because you can only stand so much doing of things because you're aging and you don't care anymore. And the ego's not invested in the same way. So now you've got all this shit to offer, but you're like, nah, I'd rather take a nap. And I'm exaggerating to make a point, but do you know what I mean?
No, I think for people that are interested in this sort of spiritual journey, you know, Richard Rohr is a wonderful author. I've read a lot of his stuff.
And he's come up many times in
same,
this podcast.
Same here. We love him. Mm-hmm.
He's a Christian mystic style interior person, but he talks about the second half of life.
Yes.
And I think after you've accomplished A, B, and C, well, A, B, and C are not as fulfilling.
Yeah.
Not everybody's into fulfilling. That's okay.
Right.
Go have a hard charging life, drink the best wine, go for it. That you're doing your, at your level of consciousness, your full expression of your,
that's good,
uniqueness. But for a lot of us, and those are the people I'm more interested in working with, you know, it's like, well, what else? Well, have you tried loving the world? That's too big. I know.
To be clear, Richard Rohr, if I may, in a non-attacking, very loving way, he is a Franciscan friar.
Yeah.
And I so know so intimately.
Catholic.
Yes.
He quotes the Bible in support of this larger inclusive Christian, you know, totality.
Yeah, no, he's a wizard at turning what could be religious dogma into liberating mystical personal empowerment teachings. Don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah, he's so good at it. God damn it.
Yes, yes. That's absolutely why I'm interested in him. I mean, you know this about me, Katie. You know, I was a devout Christian early on. I mean, like in school and high school, and then fell away from that because it did not really seem, it seemed silly. And then I've come back through a whole batch of different explorations to see that there's a mystical side to Christianity, where Christianity is just one view into a larger reality. So I appreciate Rohr.
Agreed. One thing I always, my thing with Rohr's concept of second half of life is I'm always like, damn it, I started the second half of life too early, because I've always been like on a soul level with stuff. And then like, excuse me. So I didn't like get the house and the mansion and the family and then realize my death.
You started in the middle of the book.
I did. And so it's a weird ride, because I was 8 years old saying to my mom, you know, it feels like unity is the only thing that really matters. And my mom was like, I don't know what's happening right now. We're making dinner.
Go do your chores.
Yeah. Let's sit down and don't talk. Okay.
Well, see, that's, you get a third half of life.
I think actually that's correct, because if
well,
you look
at the human design.
Yeah. Motherfucker. I do have the three parts life. That's a 6-2 line. That's a whole other conversation. Let's go on your records. What's your full legal name, Steve Sfar?
Stephen Robert Sfar.
Of course it is. That's a joke about judgment. Stephen.
My middle name is my father's name.
Right. Your middle name is my father's name.
Oh.
Cassidy?
Nope. My father's name is the Godfather of Soul, James Brown.
Oh, yeah, right. God damn. I was like, which one? Who? Stevie Wonder? Oh, okay. All right, Steve, we're going to do this quick and dirty because of time. I want to get in quickly. I'm kind of just dropping in. The way I have been lately. So we'll just breathe deeply into the low belly for a moment. Ah. And if you are so inclined, you could close the eyes and bring the full attention to the interior, as we've been discussing. And as you inhale into the low belly, let's allow that low belly to expand and fill with air. And as you exhale, you just allow that belly to collapse. This is just a deepening of the breath, moving away from the shallow breathing we sometimes do in this reality. And we'll feel our feet flat on the ground. Okay, and I get that we don't have to go through this grounding piece. For you, Steve, it's like shoot a foot and a half wide grounding cord down to the center of the earth from the base of your spine, just in your mind's eye. And receive a river of light from the earth up through that grounding cord into your root and then down through your legs, all the way down through the quads and glutes and hammies, knees, calves, shins, ankles, and feet. And watch that river of light descend through the open window of the bottom of each foot through 1,000 energetic tree roots of light that will extend from your essence hundreds of miles into the earth. And that river of light will continue to flow up from the earth down to your through your legs, down through those roots, anchoring you to the here and now in a tripod grounding structure of light. Through the roots that are through the left foot, through the roots that are through the right foot. Wow. I've been through some new activations myself lately, which has everything moving faster, brighter with everyone. It's kind of great. And so we do acknowledge the forces of light, asking for guidance, direction, and courage to know the truth. As it is revealed for our highest good and the highest good of everyone connected to us. Holy Spirit of God, protect me, please, from all forms of self-centeredness and direct my attention to the work at hand. Help me to know Stephen Robert Sfar in the light of the Akashic Records. Help me to see Stephen Robert Sfar through the eyes of the Lords of the Records and enable me to share the wisdom and compassion. That the masters, teachers, and loved ones of Stephen Robert Sfar have for Stephen Robert Sfar. And I'll go quiet for just a moment. Okay, and as we deepen into and anchor into the Akashic Records of Stephen Robert Sfar, I'm asking the Lords, Masters, and Teachers of his records to clear, uncreate, destroy, release, eliminate, eradicate, dissipate anything and everything in my field or his that would stand in the way of us receiving the highest and best, most divinely guided insights, wisdom, feedback, healing, integration, clearing, Allah, and or anything else you'd like to deliver. Okay, so where would you like to begin, Steve?
I would say I'd like to begin with this. For the last couple of years, I've been have felt spiritually dry. I have my spiritual practices, which have stood me well, but recently I feel renewed. I'm doing some work in subtle energy and light body. I feel more enlivened, and my other spiritual practices feel enlivened. So what guidance would you have on my spiritual practices, and what can further my growth in those areas?
Okay. And so what are the practices you're currently using and have been using, and what is the light body energy work you've been doing?
Meditation, maybe like four basic pillars of spiritual practice: meditation, prayer, service, and journaling. The light body is some stuff I'm learning through a wonderful colleague that has to do with activating a vibrational body close to the physical, similar to chakras, and feeling that. And then from there, going deep into the heart chakra, and it explodes out into a light body cocoon about 30 feet all around me. Yeah. And it's seen in an imaginal realm and felt that way, not in a physical or necessarily even energetic realm.
Yeah, that's what I teach people. Mm-hmm. So that's there's a few things they were going to ask. Okay, one, feel this right now if you could. Feel into your third chakra. Mm-hmm. Relax and receive. Notice anything that tightens or constricts or contracts and just be present to it gently. So as this continues to descend, what they were saying is open the heart more. Your work now is all in the heart, and it's in understanding the heart as the portal through which the light activates your alignment with a more conscious and somatically felt and experienced divine awakening. So you're moving from a sort of visceral, mental, cognitive awareness of source and a knowing in your consciousness of what is into an experiential explosion into what is. An experiential felt sense of the light of God. This is necessarily has to occur through the heart. Okay, so then this is deepening now. We'll just allow this light to drop down through that third chakra, down into the second, down into the base of the spine. When one truly activates the light body, this is a very different experience than when one meditates. Meditation can organically lead to awakening and activation of certain aspects of the light body, but humanity is ready now. One moment. To receive direct light body activation much more broadly than it ever has been. Okay, and now there's a crystalline light grid descending down through your the crown. Down and feel into your whole mid-body, from the midline of your body, from the crown down through the center of you, all the way to the root. Feel the entire alignment from the crown down through your head, down through your throat, into your chest, passing through the heart, down to the third, down to two and one. Ya Shafi al-Alim al-Qudus as-Salam al-Razak al-Aziz. What is required now is far beyond anything conceptual. What is required for you now is an awakening into the visceral, the direct, the Gnostic. And you've taken yourself, your spiritual practice already has taken you, the vehicle of your body, mind, being, organism, to the place where you can receive higher consciousness frequencies that are beyond what the collective was ready for when, say, Buddhism was introduced or when, say, Buddhism was popularized. You're ready for more. Buddhism, or whatever word is more appropriate to your experience of what you've been doing, is a perfect foundational set of foundational tools to have softened the receptive and perceptive mechanisms within your body, mind, organism. And having been so made pliant those receptors within you are ready for what is next, which is these light body activations. Be prepared, they say. After this, okay, much is going to unfold after this on the inner planes. Attune regularly, watch closely. and be ready for the experience of when certain people, we call them sleepers, come into your presence, they will suddenly start to be hot and feel feelings, and maybe they want to pass out or cry or laugh, or something spontaneous happens that they go, I don't know what's happening right now. And just by being near you, this is the light body that you're now going to be carrying, activating in them, their light body. And as you can understand, the light body can't be activated until, you know, certain egoic trauma-based stuck points are softened, opened, cleared, released. So sometimes when people come in your presence, Steve, they're going to just get a bunch of those stuck points softened, opened, activated, released just by being near you. Notice how no words are required in that exchange. No words are required. You understand?
Yes.
Okay. You can think, they say, of all of this as a kind of next level baptism. This is a baptism into the fire of the light, the actual light that you get to be more directly aware of, receptive to, and experience directly. Okay. Questions?
Yes, let's keep going a few minutes. This is fine for me and lovely. Thank you. The current writing project I have, I feel is aligned with these purposes. Help me know where the ego parts and the presentational and the lecturing expert parts are from the heart-based truth of my uniqueness that I'm trying to express.
Help you know where they are?
I know it's not a question yet. It feels sloppy.
Are you asking to have an intuitive sense of when you're going into ego versus when you're channeling direct?
Yes, yes. And anything I need to do better to, yes, yes.
Okay, okay. Okay, once again, feel into the third chakra. Or the solar plexus. Feel, receive. Okay. So that was a transmission of something that will help. A. B, you'll just have more of a sense of it in your solar plexus from that transmission. B, notice when the protector parts inside of your psyche are attempting to protect the vulnerable parts. Anytime the protector part comes online and says, strong, tall man knows things for you. You don't know things. Strong, tall man knows. You are in protector mode, defending against a possible future judgment that hasn't even occurred yet. Get present to the vulnerable one, the younger one underneath, who says, I'm afraid they won't believe. Sit with him. Ask the light to meet you there. The new crystalline grids of light, the new activated light, the divine light, the Christ light. whichever of those words you prefer, ask it to meet you where the young one is vulnerable, and let the light transmute the young one's vulnerability into an integrated wholeness. But of course, none of that can take place until you've noticed you're in protector, defensive preacher mode. So this comes back to your own point of seeing deeply. Questions?
Beautiful.
Okay.
No. I'm feeling the hits. I feel light. I feel lit up in that imaginal way that you're describing. Yeah.
Okay. Last piece for you, and we'll wrap up for here. I promise you this is not common on the podcast, but you might do a session at some point where we do an hour of this. Like, you should book a session at some point, because they're like, we have more to activate. Let's blow your whole structure open and apart and make you like blow it all apart. You're ready. So when you're ready for that, set that up. Secondly, remember that, or know that, or remember again that the imaginal realm, it goes like this: 3D duality realm, imaginal realm, realms of spirit. So density to less density to no density. And so the imaginal realm, you can think of it as a portal to the next realms, which are the realms of source, God, light, pure truth, oneness, the light, okay? But you need the imaginal realm as a doorway to those realms. But don't stop at the imaginal realm. It's a doorway. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Where you want to be speaking from, ultimately, ideally, in the big picture purpose of your entire existence this time around, where you want to be speaking from is the realms beyond the imaginal realm. Straight source. You want to just straight source it. That's your whole thing. That's your whole soul thing. Your soul is never going to feel satisfied until you're directly connected to source and speaking from there. And just as you said earlier, some people don't need to go that far. Some people can go, imagination is our friend. End of conversation. And they're satisfied. You need to know where it all comes from. And you need to not only know, but you need to live as that light. Don't you?
Fuck.
Precisely. And this is the light's ability to see you at your depths. It knows you. We know you. They say so intimately. And we know that certain, you know, plenty of people come here to this podcast and come to all kinds of spiritual people, and they want this and they want that. Not all of them, maybe 2%. Mac, 1.7%, 1.5, 1.2. I'm just listening. 1.1% of people want to know the light as themselves and live as the light and speak from the light. That's mysticism, the true deepest mysticism that there is. And so it is for you.
Yep.
I mean. Okay, we're going to close your records.
We went from shucks to fuck.
Yes, that's the goal. All right.
Yeah.
We want to thank the masters, teachers, and loved ones for their love and compassion. I want to thank the lords of the records for their point of view, and the Holy Spirit of Light for all knowledge and healing. I ask that you return all of Stephen Robert Sfar's energy to himself now. I ask that you return him to his complete human wholeness now. The divine portal and the Akashic records of Stephen Robert Sfar are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic records of Stephen Robert Sfar are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic records of Stephen Robert Sfar are now closed. Amen. 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 Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. Ashhadu anna Muhammad abduhu wa rasulullah. Namaste, motherfuckers.
Thank you. Deep gratitude.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for coming on today.
Yeah, it was really lovely talking to you, Steve. There's your face. See, I did it.
All right. I'm very grateful for all of that, Katie. And to you too, Cassidy. It's good to meet you. I have to run, but thank you very much for this invitation.
Thank you. Have a great
day. See you soon.
Okay. Take care.
See you, Steve. Nice.
Oh, so good.
That's great.
Some people's records, like some people's spirit, when I get to go in with them, I have to say a few things, if I may. He's done so much work and he's so open and he's so good with being spiritually aligned that it's such a deep, deep, deep nourishing well, a pleasurable nourishing well for me to get to sit in that. It's like, I don't want to close it. You know, it's so beautiful. And number two,
sometimes you say, I don't want to walk around as you for the rest of the day. You say that a lot to people, not like as an insult, but like, yeah, no. But this time,
I don't want to walk around as anyone else ever, really, because I would be like, in this case, I'd just be so ungrounded all day. I'd just be like, So I can't walk around as anyone. But yeah, right. He's so delightful to be with. But I have to acknowledge this crazy thing that happened. We have a couple minutes, right?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. Which is that I went to this spiritual fair this weekend to help a friend who was selling her like salves and oils and objects. And I just this is a story for people about how consciousness works and how the awareness you have that you don't understand where you have it from is always serves you. Like when you know something, but you don't know how you know, that's the shit right there. That's straight divine shit right there. Anyway, my friend says, I'm doing this fair and I'm going to sell these things. And immediately, without having any fucking mental process or emotional process at all, I just said, can I come? Can I help you? What do you need? Can I help you in some way? And she was like, yeah, please. I totally need help. Everything in me knew I needed to be there. Okay. Now I thought in my mind that it was about, you know, helping my friend sell her witchy stuff. Okay. So I go to this thing because I'm like a zillion percent sure I'm going. It was 4.5 hours from my house.
Oh my God. So not a like, yeah, sure, I'll show up.
No, exactly. It was going into deep Western Pennsylvania, driving through the rain on a weekend, you know, and I'm like, I guess I just really want to help my friend. I get there. The whole day was an incredible mystical unfolding for me. I was there to meet these people I met. I go around to all the booths, you know, it's like little booths in a room. There were probably like, I don't know, 20 booths, a lot of Reiki people, a lot of crystals, the whole thing. And I tend to be such a judgmental asshole.
Right. You're at a space where there's potential for a lot of eye rolling.
Well stated. It could have been a whole lot of bullshit, right?
Right.
And it was real small town, and I'm my arrogant city dwelling smart. I'm like a smart mystic, and I went to schools that have names.
I say fuck more than they do.
Yeah, I'm edgy and artsy, and I'm smart. So terrible. So I get in there, and there's these people in this one corner of this rectangular room. I'm trying to think of the best way to tell this. My first impulse, or my first, with my eyes, I saw shit show. With my being said, you need a healing from her and a reading from him. Go now. So I walk up and they're like, it turns out they're a team. There's a man and woman team. Immediately the woman and I are talking and she's like, oh, you do this work. And I go, yep. And then she goes, okay, what are you doing right now? And I go, well, there's this thing on the back of your neck that's ready to release. You want to let it go? She goes, yeah. So I'm standing at her booth giving her a session because it's just happening. It's like, I can't, it's just happening.
Yeah.
She's like, oh my God. She has to close her eyes. And she's like, I got to ground. What the fuck? And she's like, oh, thank you. Oh, whoo. And it's like, great, whatever. Then I'm like, all right, well, we're clearly attuned. I'm hopping on your table. She goes, great. I get on the table. She pulls all this fucking shit out of me. And she's like, yeah, your business could only grow to a certain size, but now your business could explode and it couldn't explode before. And there were these spells on the thing. And it's, did you have early childhood sexual abuse? Yep.
Jesus. And
it's like, ping, ping, ping. Amazing. Takes like 10 minutes. Really fast, really powerful. Then she starts telling me about her business partner, the kid in the corner. He's like 20 nothing, little boy person who I needed 20 nothing. And I was like, everything in me was like, have a reading, have a reading, have a reading. So I go to this kid's table and I'm like, so you saw what just happened with your partner? He goes, yeah. And he's like, all right, well, we're already in it. I go, yeah. Then I'm wizarding him. And like he had angel wings behind him that I could see. And then there was a thing blocking them. And then I pulled that off and I wasn't trying. It was just happening. And then he starts to channel these images and he's like, does this mean anything to you? And he shows it to me. And I'm like, that's light language. And he goes, yeah, it just descended through your crown into your spine. And I was like, okay. And then he goes, does this mean anything to you? And
wait,
he shows
where were
me
the images.
He's drawing on a little napkin.
Oh, he's drawing them. Wow.
Yes. He's just seeing it and drawing it. Right. And I know this particular, I've seen this particular light language drawn before. So I was like, that's light language. But then he holds it up, the paper where he drew it, to his business partner, this woman. And she has to like close her left eye. And she's like, ha, because the light that is being transmitted through the paper to her is fucking her up. But then I'm looking to my left and she's to my left and I'm looking in front of me and he's in front of me. So we're forming a triangle. And I, as she's receiving into her body the light of that light code, which came through my soul into him, I'm getting a healing on my back. Now, the moment she would look away from the paper and be like, I can't take it, it's too much, that he and I both would be like, look at the paper, look at the paper.
You're breaking the triangle.
You're breaking it. So she would look and then all of a sudden, so it was this triangle that we needed each other to do the thing that happened there. Ever since then, okay, to end that, another thing that happened in that moment was there was this whole thing this kid brought through, this crazy, I don't know how to even describe it. It was a huge crystal that dropped in, kind of like what I was just saying to Steve. It dropped in through my crown and just hit the spine and it blew everything left and right and it blew me open more and it was a new something. And the whole time it was coming in, I was going like, is this for good? Yes, yes, yes. Okay, go ahead. My healings with people have been totally different. I can drop in right away. I don't need like such a long meditative get in the space. I'm just like, feel them, ground them. Here we go. Boom. Everything changed because I went to a Western Pennsylvania tiny room where these people who, to give you a sense of it, it turns out the woman works at fucking Walmart. The kid works at Cricket. I don't even know what that is.
It's a cell phone company.
Great.
Or a cell phone service thing.
And as they're like changing my fucking life, I spent the whole time being like, you people need to quit your jobs and do what you do. Why do you work at Walmart? And she was like, I know, it's terrible. I know. And I was like, so I'm giving them financial coaching and I'm going like, look at my website, copy what I do, do it. Do it now. Charge $175. And they're both like, what? And I'm blowing their mind with like money coaching and they're blowing my shit open. And it was this incredible thing that happened. And at the end of it, I go, so what do I owe you? And they go like 20. And I go, what? And then I said to the lady with the checkout thing, I go, please charge my card $40 and let me leave a tip. So I left them $50. They were going to charge $20 to change my life.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you also gave them a session. I mean,
okay.
But no, I appreciate what you're saying.
Still.
100%.
And then that was like the first 20 minutes I was at this thing. The woman in the booth across from us was a pet psychic. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. So I had a session about Squeezle. I've had all these questions about Squeezle. Is she unhappy? She gives me this look sometimes where she looks like she's intimidated and afraid of me. And I'm like, God, I don't want my dog to be intimidated by me. What am I doing wrong? And she was like, no, that's not what that look means. And then she like downloaded all this shit about Squeezle that was so helpful. Yes, it was. I'm petting her now. And that changed my whole perception. And then I was able to like communicate directly with Squeezle ever since I've been home. I'll tell her something and her full behavior changes. She fully understands me.
Wow.
And I sort of thought like she gets like 40% of what I'm saying. Mm-mm. This woman like retrained me. It was an amazing day. It was an amazing day. And it's changed me forever.
Did you take postcards?
I took 60 zillion postcards and I put them everywhere on everybody's table that I went up to. I was like, can I leave these here? It's a spiritual podcast. It's also funny. Left them everywhere.
Love it.
And at the booth I was at all day, people were taking them all day. Oh, I can't wait to listen. I can't wait.
Fuck yes.
So
more
it was
of
a,
that.
And it was, so the end of the, for everybody listening, it's not just a fun story. It's like when you have that thing that goes like, I have to do that. That's consciousness. That's knowing. That's do that. Definitely do that. There's no need to understand it. And you may think you're going there for one reason, to help your friend sell wet wipes, but it's not.
Hemp infused wet wipes. Hemp infused wet wipes charged with angel energy.
Yep, exactly. Yep,
that's what they are. So your booty hole is both spiritually and physically clean.
Yeah, that's what it says.
I would love that, frankly. I kind of need that. I mock at what I love.
Have you had a thing like that lately? Any kind of things like that where you're like, I have to do this thing and you don't even know?
That is a great question. I don't think nothing that feels revelatory, but I would say, you know, it's kind of attached to that less grasping energy because grasping is never that.
Right.
It's never, ever that.
Yeah.
But the things that are just like, this is cool. This is like, honestly, my work with Feet First feels like that most of the time now. It's not like magic at all, but it feels right because I'm just like, I'm just going to do this and it's fun and it's doing a thing.
Aww.
Like it doesn't, there's no charge to it.
Mm.
And that charge can be good or bad. Sometimes that charge is like, yes. Okay. I will say I fucking finally got to perform last weekend.
Congratulations.
Holy shit. I just started crying.
Oh.
Just now saying this. Like, it was like, oh, that is still the thing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to fucking lie.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily need to do a play or that or whatever, but holy balls. Just getting up on stage and talking and having people be there with you in sync and in vibe and in comedy.
What was the show? What was it?
It was Speechless, which is the improvised PowerPoint presentations. They are performing at Club Fugazi monthly right now. They're going to up it to weekly eventually. It's part of this whole rebirth of this space that has a circus show in residence at it that's awesome, and they're doing some late night stuff. So it's improvised PowerPoint presentations, which sounds really dull, but it's fucking hilarious when it works. Katie's done it. I've done it. Super funny stuff. Speechless Live. And I did a TED Talk on natural deodorant. And I'll say,
yeah, you
fucking killed. I killed. So did everybody else. I didn't quote win. It's a fake competition. It's a competition. We have judges and the audience votes, but I don't care that I didn't win. I fucking killed. Audience was right there with me. I was like, spiritual boner. It does feel spiritual. Like that energy is like fully deeply connected to that. Just like, this is what I want to do and I love it. So that is a thing, but it wasn't like I had to follow my intuition. This is the right thing to do. No, it just was like, it was offered to me. Thank God I get to do it. And then I did it. And just now when I was about to tell you about it, I teared up. So clearly it was
like
deeper than even
this
I thought.
Story. And it's so to the point of how the spirit, the light or whatever, how we each articulate that or be that or live as our expression of that, it always has a 3D form. There's always a 3D form of your highest spiritual expression. And there you go. There's your form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm so happy for you. And I think what I wanted to say about that is that I personally find it so satisfying when the spirit can be, when you get to be the spiritual energy in form, in 3D form, that's the whole fucking, that's the gift of being in a body. That's why you bother having a body.
Yeah. And I would argue back to our earlier point, those are the moments that, like when I quote, fall in love with someone on stage, they're doing that. There's good actors. And I'm like, you did it. You kicked ass. Great job. Fuck yes. That's one thing. And that's fine. But when people are doing that plus the like living
beyond,
channeling what some beyondness through it, and there's the ineffable, and that's what I've often gone, why did I just literally fall in love with you? I fell in love with you. I didn't just think you're cool or sexy. I went, and I think that's because our hearts talked to each other or whatever metaphor you want to use for that.
The last thing I wanted to say about that is I keep running into this thing where I'm like, more performers, famous people, I don't think this applies to you. I don't actually know, but I keep finding the Taurus energy in a lot of performers. Like I'll look up people's astrology and find out they have a lot of Taurus, which is particularly with theater actors, it's like a lot of earth energy. Taurus is like earth and beauty and earth and stubborn and slow and earth and grounded and all the great things of Taurus. And I keep sort of going, to God or the universe, like this performing thing is so inherently spiritual. How is it that all these Torrens are in it? Like what? Because Torrens can be so not transcendy people. They're not transcending this plane. They're on this plane, period. Like to give you a sense of it, I have no earth in my chart anywhere. And I'm talking about astrology now, not human design. None, which is not great when you're on a planet to have no frequencies of that planet. It's a challenging way to be. But it's what allows me to do all the high vibey, whatever I'm doing. So then I go, everything about performing is high vibey spiritual to me. So how are these Torrens doing it? And then I realized, oh, if you're that grounded, like the earth is so spiritual in her way. The earth is a spirit body. It's a being. It's a light being. If you're of the earth, you can not only bring the spirit of the earth through in your work, but you can stand the physical rigor of performing is physically rigorous. Rami and I were talking about how my little point of view that I think you're an athlete. When you're an actor working on stage, you're an athlete. They say you're like a thinky artsy. No, you're a fucking athlete because there's high pressure. You got to be on, beyond, beyond. 8 shows a week for 8 weeks or whatever. That's you got to take care of that body. You got to drink enough water. You got to sleep enough. It's athletic. It's of the body. And I finally got it the other day. I'm like, that's why the fucking Torrens are killing it on stage because they have the chemistry of the earth. They can be grounded enough to bring the light through and on the ground say the words for the people athletically. You see what I mean? Does that make sense?
I do. I know we have to sign off here and finish up, but you just reminded me someone who we should try and get on the podcast, actually. My friend James Monroe Iglehart, who
fuck yes,
big Broadway actor now, like won the Tony for playing the genie in Aladdin, and now he's playing Jefferson in Hamilton, the role that was originated by our friend David Diggs. So like, there's this whole web of like friends doing this, killing it. But he's also part of Freestyle Love Supreme, which is the improv, freestyle rap comedy show that's on Broadway as well. I just watched his Instagram, and he was like two show day. And I was like, what the fuck is about to happen? And he narrated it. He does a 4 p.m. Freestyle Love Supreme show, which is about as demanding as you can ask, because you are off the dome, making shit up, rapping, singing, high energy, boom, ha-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka. Goes across town afterward, you know, wearing your mask, go to the next place, puts on the full costume, wig, makeup, playing Lafayette and Jefferson in the biggest, most also athletic and demanding and emotionally powerful rap 100,000 miles an hour, and then does Hamilton that night.
Wow.
And he is just saying, hey, I'm going to go do this. I'm like, and he's also a hefty man. He's in incredible shape. Let's be clear. This is also a good lesson. Like people go, oh, he's fat, so he's out of shape. Bullshit. That dude is an athlete and a love fountain.
Can we get him on here, please?
Yeah, let me get a hold
also,
of him.
Also, David.
Yeah, I'm working on that one.
We got to massage that one.
He's like, you know, flying all over the world making movies and TV, so.
What about Anthony?
I could probably get Anthony on here.
He got real high-pitched on
he's
that
also,
one.
He's I could probably get Anthony. I don't know. We'll find out. Let's try. I'll try all of them.
Oh, my God. Cassidy?
Yeah?
I'm sorry if the words I said felt attacky. I apologize.
I appreciate that very much. And I definitely, it poked a pain body clearly because I was like immediately like, nuh-uh, instead of like, haha, we're talking about things and poking at each other, which usually we do and it's fine. So it clearly felt
I understand.
More pain
this
body.
This is the whole thing of the eight is like constantly being like, inside I felt like a golden retriever puppy in that moment. But the way I said it, I'm sure, had edge on it that landed for anyone but me.
Why do you do that is what I heard.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right.
Thank you.
I love you too. I appreciate that. I appreciate that acknowledgement though.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
A zillion percent.
Thank you. I love you.
Love you too.
Let's do some shit.
Do your work, but also have some fun, bitches.
Oh, I'm going to just go be goofy today. I'm getting paid a lot of money to just say random fucking words to a machine.
What are you talking about?
It's a little bit I can't tell you, but I can tell you that I'm teaching machines to understand human speech.
What do you mean you can't tell me? Like an NDA?
Because it's like NDA kind of shit. Yeah.
It's a voiceover job?
No.
It's
literally teaching AI to recognize human speech.
Wow.
So we just say words in different ways into microphones in different parts of a place.
For Google?
Nope. And I'm not going to say what it's for.
For LinkedIn? For Pixar?
Look.
Tesla.
Tesla. It's for Tesla. Yep. That's it. Because we're going to do voice-activated cars for Tesla.
You know, I did see a thing on the news today that said Tesla just reached trillionaire status.
Yeah, because of fucking Hertz ordering 100,000 Teslas.
It's pretty interesting.
Isn't that wild?
I think that's kind of amazing that A, that Hertz could afford it, and B, I want to rent a Hertz now if I get to drive a Tesla. Are you kidding?
Right. Sounds fun.
Fuck yeah. Okay, go to our Patreon page and patronize us, please, so we can each get Teslas.
So we can get to be trillionaires.
So we can have Teslas.
We would like to be as wealthy as Elon Musk and then use our money for good and not evil.
I make this pledge to you, listener. If you patronize us and we get to have Teslas, every listener gets a Tesla.
You get a Tesla and you get a Tesla. And I promise that I will not fly a giant penis into space.
Thank you, white man.
With my billion
Thank
dollars.
Thank you, white man, who understands things. He sent his dick to Mars. You got to do it.
He sent his dick to Mars. Ooh, do your work. And don't send your dick to Mars.
Bye.
Bye. What are you asking for? All of the answers? Say what? All of the answers?
Yeah, all the answers. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod, @allanswerspod. Thank you.
Shucks. That's my favorite. That's what this, Desmond, when you're editing, can we call this episode Shucks?
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.